Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
We return to Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Brought to you by Digitex. Managed print services to keep your printing costs down?
Yeah, Digitex does that.
Digitex.ca on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
It is 1:33 in Edmonton. Bob Stauffer, Brendan Escott with you. This is Oilers Now. As we are going to head off to our top story for Legacy Heating and Cooling. Get your AC today with no payments and no interest for a year. That's how you build a legacy, Legacy Heating and Cooling. Game one, the Kings of the North, the Montreal Canadiens, going up against the Vegas Golden Knights. And to share some insight on that series, we head off to the River Cree Resort Casino Hotline, and we are pleased to be joined on the show once again by Marc-Antoine Godin of The Athletic in Montreal. Hello, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good, Bubba. How are you?
Good. I'm disappointed that the Oilers didn't get out of their opening round series. I will tell you, you'll find this, and I think, you know, I had a pretty, I like Montreal. I like the off season that Marc Bergevin had. I was a little bit surprised where the Canadians finished, but you should know that about 80% of the listeners to the show wanted to see the Canadians beat the Toronto Maple Leafs in round one after Edmonton was vanquished. So, you know, I think that's more of a reflection on the Leafs than it is on Montreal. But it was surprising how it worked out. So tell me the truth. First of all, were you surprised the Canadians didn't finish a little higher in the regular season, given how they upgraded their team? And secondly, were you surprised the Canadians came back when they're down 3-1 against the Leafs?
All right. First question, no, I'm not surprised regarding where they ended up in the standings. I had higher expectations for them prior to the season. Yeah. But COVID-19 hit on the team, delayed their schedule, and, you know, jammed up 26 game in 44 days, it became an uphill battle for them. So from that point on, you know, just keeping up with playing every other night, keeping up with the injuries and all that, and just trying to find that motivation to get going every night and not even having enough time to reflect on the past game because you're already thinking forward to the next, it made things very complicated for them. So bottom line, no, I was not too surprised. I was surprised, though, that they came back 3-1 against the Leafs. A part of me thought, okay, it's possible. After all, it's the Maple Leafs. But to see that the Canadians had it in themselves to orchestrate that comeback, that was quite impressive, honestly.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, Mark, because they go play Winnipeg, and first shift of the game, Dylan DeMello gets knocked out of the series. And he was one of their top, you know, he's paired with Morrissey. He was in their top four the entire time against Edmonton. And then as soon as Scheifele hit Evans, I looked at my wife and daughter and said, he's done. Like, he's out. He's done for this. I'm not talking about Evans. I'm talking about Scheifele. I'm like, he just took himself out of the rest of the playoffs. They're going to have no choice.
He took his team out of the playoffs.
Yes.
Honestly, I mean, and somewhere, I mean, I admire how Paul Maurice decided to go to bat for his player, his star centerman, and he said all the right things, and he went above and beyond of protecting his player. But I'm sure that deep down, he knew that Mark Scheifele had put his team behind the eight ball. And from that point on, it put them in a very difficult spot because Paul Stastny was already hurt. And, you know, you could see that their center line was all of a sudden very thin. And Pierre-Luc Dubois was not himself in the playoffs. So, you know, it became a lot more simpler for the Canadians to, you know, to try to contain that offense.
Which, you know, it just frustrates Oilers fans even more, but they need to remember is Carey Price had a .944 save percentage the final three games against the Leafs.
Yeah.
Connor Hellebuyck was at .950 against Edmonton. Like he was, and Connor McDavid couldn't get a call the entire series. Hasn't drawn a penalty in 2 years. So are the Canadians, are the Canadians built to win in the playoffs with that? And I know they don't have Petrie tonight, but with that big mark, with that big defense, and then a great goaltender in Carey Price, even though they, maybe they don't have a McDavid or Draisaitl up front, are they built to win in terms of how you need to build teams?
Well, there are certainly, that's certainly the hope that Marc Bergevin has, because that's how we conceive this team, thinking even though we might not finish first in the standings, even though there might be ups and downs during the regular season and some players that on some nights will look either slow or sluggish or what have you, when come playoff time, we'll be there. We'll have you know, the proper size for it. We'll have the proper style of play, and we'll have the experience. And you look at all the guys that Bergevin went out to get in the offseason, but also during the season, you know, a bunch of Stanley Cup winners in there, a lot of experience to try to you know, to calm the waters. And you're going to have another test tonight in Vegas. The Canadians have not played in the full building yet. So, and everybody knows how rowdy it can get in Vegas. So to end up, you know, game one of the semifinals of the Stanley Cup in a building like that, in an environment that you're not accustomed to anymore, well, you'll need a lot of poise. And to be able to get all those guys that provide a lot of poise in the playoffs because of their experience, it'll come handy, that's for sure.
You know what they say in Vegas, Mark? You know what they say?
Yeah, they say plenty of things.
They say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Stays in Vegas, yeah.
That's not with social media. What happens in Vegas usually beats you home, so you got to be careful when you're in Vegas. Marc-Antoine Gaudin joining us from The Athletic in Montreal. How much of this, look, we have Jerry Johansson on the show. He represents Carey Price.
And Carey, Gallup. Yeah.
How much of this is just Carey Price? Like, you know, you got a rested goaltender. And by the way, rested because they didn't have to overplay him because Bergevin went out and got Jake Allen. But how much of this is about Price looking like, you know, that goalie that could play for Canada again if we end up going off to the Olympics here?
Yeah, well, okay, well, a couple of things. First, he's rested also because he had a concussion, so he didn't finish the season because, you know, he was barely he was healthy enough to come back for the playoffs, but he finished the season on injured reserve. So, but yeah, Jake Allen, I think that was key in enabling him to, you know, to have a reduced workload. I think it was a priority for the Montreal Canadiens. They wasted, if I may say so, some of Carey Price's best seasons because they overused him, and he was asked to compensate for you know, the fact that at other positions that team was simply not strong enough. But you know, Carey Price has been very inconsistent for the last four regular seasons, but one thing that has remained is that when come playoff time, he's always there. So I think that what we need to when we look at Carey Price now arriving in his mid-30s or so, we have to say, okay, well, it might not be the guy who's going to be like the superstar goalie from October to April. He will need a quality backup to give him a break, you know, here and there. But in crunch time, he's still that fierce competitor and that guy that can really step up his game. And the Canadians over time have not had too many of those guys that were able to really get to another level. And we tend to take Carey Price for granted. But year after year, and it's been true for you know, ever since he's been playing for Montreal, he always steps it up in the playoffs. But now the difference is that he's had a higher quality team in front of him. And it's not just about him. You look against the Jets. I mean, there's some nights he was barely making like three or four key saves. It was a lot more against the Toronto Maple Leafs, where he really stood up and kept his team in the series.
Well, I have an ongoing debate with my longtime broadcast partner, Mark, about who's better. Jack Michaels is a big fan of Marc-Andre Fleury, and I'm a Carey Price guy. So
yeah.
we might have a bit of an idea. I think we both think that, between you and me, we both think Vegas is deeper. Are they deeper? Like, the Canadians are, Tatar is not hurt, right? He's a healthy scratch. Is that correct?
He is. Yeah. He's a healthy scratch. They thought that they could have the Danilo Gallagher line going without him. And if he's not producing scoring chances and he's not converting those chances, well, on the defensive part of the game, because that line always has a lot of defensive assignments, they can find better alternatives in either Archery Lehkonen or Jake Evans, who is who is still injured, but he might come back at some point in the series. So for Tatar, I think it.
Wow.
It seems as though it's the end for him with the Montreal Canadiens, because he's one of those guys who's not stepping it up in the playoffs. He's a regular season guy, as far as we know. So, but yeah, the Canadiens still have depth. I mean, they get hit by a couple of injuries. Having a guy like Thomas Tatar on the sidelines, that's not too shabby.
You talked about the acquisitions in season. I thought Eric Staal looked slow against Toronto in the first couple games.
Yeah,
but he's come on, hasn't he?
There's this crazy chemistry that has developed overnight between him, Corey Perry, and Joel Armia, and those three together, I've brought in a type of cycling that's really not typical of Montreal Canadiens play, and it's interesting because even though they barely played in their own end, so they scored a few goals, but it's just simply the amount of possession time in the offensive zone that's been so striking. So they haven't. It seems as though they play the game at a slower pace, but they force. It's like a pitcher in baseball, right? From one lane to another, the Canadiens throw a fastball to the other team, then they throw a slider. Well, this is the changeup. That line there is the changeup or the screwball or whatever. They definitely a change in pace, a change in rhythm. But they threw off the Winnipeg Jets throughout that whole series. And I'm curious to see how it's going to apply against a team that's big from the Western Conference, and if they're going to be able to remain as effective against Vegas as they were, at least against Winnipeg.
You know, you mentioned Dano. Why don't they just re-sign that guy?
Yeah.
I'm serious.
No kidding.
Like,
I know.
To me, he's not, like, especially given that Kotkaniemi is not yet. I mean, it's pretty obvious that Suzuki's going to be pretty good. He's, there's some people. Do you see the similarities with Suzuki and Bergeron, by the way? Patrice Bergeron? Do you think that's a fair comparison?
I don't know. It's to me, it's still a little bit far-fetched. Even Claude Julien, when he first arrived, he compared Suzuki more to Krejci than to Bergeron.
Okay. Okay.
I was mentioning Paul Stastny, very high hockey IQ guy. Maybe he could be a guy like that too, but he's defensively responsible. There's no doubt there. But he's still, a second year player. But yeah, I agree with you. We can see that he's going to be a top six forward. It's not as certain with Kotkaniemi. Hence the need for Philippe Danault. And you look at the quality of competition, the assignments that he gets night after night, I don't see the Canadiens being comfortable in giving those assignments to either Suzuki or Kotkaniemi by next season, because if they do that, well, how much is it going to hamper their offensive contribution? If they don't bring back Danault, it's going to have to be somebody else. He's a key player for them. But at the same time, Dano knows it, his agent knows it, and it's all going to be a matter of, how much are the Canadiens willing to commit to this player? And it's, we've discussed that before, you and I. It's a tricky situation financially, tricky environment to negotiate a new contract, especially for a UFA. So I feel like we've gone through all the stages and we're back to square one, to where we were a year ago with Dano not having a contract. And thinking, okay, well, am I going to be the last one when the music stops? To me, he has proved his value to the Canadians, but the money still has to work, and I think that it's one of the biggest hurdles at this point.
Well, I can tell you, Oilers fans would love to see him as a third-line center in Edmonton playing behind McDavid and Draisaitl. Could you imagine how good Edmonton would be at center if that was the case? That would be pretty good.
That's true.
Ironically enough, Tatar is represented by Rich Winner, who lives in Edmonton, and you already mentioned Yoel Armia. He is represented by Jerry Johansson, who's from Edmonton, and I could see both those guys making sense here, and I don't think the Canadians will get either of those two guys signed. Do you?
Tatar, no. Armia, I think they're on the fence because he's a guy who can frustrate you during the regular season, but he's their best penalty killer. The Canadians have grown into loving their bigger players, and I know that internally they really value his skill set. So it's a matter of consistency with Armia, but I see him having a better chance of coming back to Montreal than Tatar, but. It's interesting. I think that Tatar still has some good hockey left in him, and he's still a guy that, you know, the team that will sign him could be able to get, you know, at least 20 goals from him. So, you know, you put him next to Draisaitl, for example, and I think that you could have a very potent line.
Yeah, well, I look at Tatar, and I think that he could do what Tyson Barrie did a year ago, right? Target Edmonton, sign a short-term deal, drive some numbers. Mark, Jeff Petrie, he's out for tonight, is that right?
Yes, he is. He's getting closer, though. Dominic Ducharme did not commit for game two, but they're very confident that he's going to get there, going to get back in action not too late in the series.
All right, tell us the truth here. Was there, at any point during the season, especially when the Canadians were taking on some water late in the regular season, playing all those games, were there people in Montreal at all suggesting that maybe Bergevin had blown it and should not be brought back out? Or conversely, is everybody now on board? He's going to win Manager of the Year. I'm going to tell you that right now. The managers vote for it. I believe he's going to win GM of the Year. Has he gone from the outhouse to the penthouse here and likely to get a contract extension?
Oh, my God. In true Montreal fashion, from the doghouse to the penthouse. I mean, what more Montreal Canadiens fan base? How much more typical can it get than that? Yes, the answer is yes. I mean, even when the Canadiens were down 1-3 against Toronto, I mean, there was plenty of second guessing and calls for him not to be re-signed. I mean, he's got 1 year left on his deal. I mean, it gets to a point where it's going to be also up to him to decide, well, do I stay Montreal long term, or after 10 years, I'll have enough. I'll just finish my contract and try to see if I can become a GM somewhere else. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibilities either. But definitely, I mean, he proved that he stuck to his plan. Some people didn't like it, but his plan ended up working. So for that, I think that it's going to be recognized by Jeff Molson.
All right, make the call. I got Vegas in six, but I wouldn't be surprised if Montreal won the series. What do you see happening here in this playoff matchup between Vegas and Montreal?
Well, on another station, I was asked my predictions, so I'll stay consistent with it, and I'll say Vegas in seven. The Canadians will give them a run for their money. There's no doubt about that.
I think you got a lot of people cheering for Montreal here. This is one where sometimes, like, you know what, in 2011, nobody in Edmonton wanted to see Vancouver when they were cheering for Boston. I think there's a fair amount of fans that wouldn't mind seeing the Canadians be successful. Maybe I'm wrong. Mark.
Yeah, well, it's whenever I go to Edmonton, there's always Montreal fans, Canadians fans in Edmonton, not as many as in Vancouver, but it's a fairly friendly building, so I'm not surprised you say that they've got some support there.
All right. Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us on a busy day, okay?
Hey, no problem. Take care, Bob.
You bet. That is Mark.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Antoine Godin of The Athletic, a longtime Montreal base writer, knows that market inside and out. All right, Royal Pizza, pizza pasta, and so much more. Edmonton-owned and operated for over 50 years. For a menu and a list of their 13 Edmonton and area locations, go online at royalpizza.ca or download the Royal Pizza app from the App Store. The Stauffer recommendation at Royal Pizza's a Mediterranean chicken. Brendan Escott likes the Texan. They got themselves a quarterback yet? I don't know. Let's go to List Day in Oilers history. For many of you, I would suggest it is probably one of the greatest days you've ever been an Oilers fan. You want to go ahead and set this up for us, Mr. Escott?
Moving on. Rindemore at the far side. Here's a break. And it's Pisani. Scores! A shorthanded goal for Pisani. And the Edmonton Oilers come out of the box, are out on the ice, and they are celebrating a huge win.
On this day in 2006, after opening the scoring 16 seconds into the game, Fernando Pisani scores shorthanded in overtime as the Oilers beat the Hurricanes 4-3 in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final. That is the first shorthanded overtime winner in NHL history. It cut the Hurricanes series lead to 3-2, heading back to Edmonton for Game 6. Jussi Markkanen turned aside 21 of 24 shots in that one. Bob Alishemsky, a two-point game.
Yeah, first game winner in overtime in the Stanley Cup Final. Of course, Wayne Gretzky had an overtime in the 88 series against the Calgary Flames. And here's your 6 degrees of separation. Marc Messier took the penalty against Calgary in 88. Steve Staios took the penalty against the Carolina Hurricanes. And Steve Staios, his stall location in the Oilers dressing room was Marc Messier's old location. So that was a wild one. I remember it well. I mentioned that I did a podcast today, The Outsiders, with Bryn Griffiths and Robin Brownlee. Bryn actually sent me to Game 5. At that time, I was on the other station doing the drive show. I went to Carolina for Game 5. John Sexsmith and myself were side by side. And when they called that penalty on Staios, I was like, you can't call that penalty an OT. Well, they did. And then just the crowd was shocked and stunned on the Pisani goal. Oilers, of course, came back, blew the Hurricanes out 4-0 in Game 6. And then about 1,500 Oilers fans bought season tickets for Carolina so they could go to Game 7. One bounce game. 2-1 late in the game, and Pisani got robbed on a rebound right in front. Man, Fernando was unbelievable that year in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It was a sight to behold. And again, for many of you who weren't privileged to grow up and watch the Oilers of the 80s like I was, that was a special, special moment. No question about it. Reed Wilkins has an abbreviated version tonight of Inside Sports from 6 to 7. I'm going to assume there's going to be some CFL talk around the Edmonton Elks and their return to play. Is that correct, Brendan?
Yeah, nothing finite yet, but I would assume the same.
Okay, there you go. Then we'll have Game 1 of the Montreal series between the Canadiens and the Golden Knights live from Vegas. Tomorrow, Sportsnet's Mark Spector for the horses and horse racing Alberta. Live racing back at Century Mile each Friday and Sunday evening. Limited fan access, but you can always watch and wager online at hbibet.com. Post time is 6:15. Also, our Inside the Game analyst on the Oilers Radio Network, Rob Brown, will join us on tomorrow's show. Up next, the Global News Weather Traffic Update with Eileen Bell, followed by Rob Breckenridge from 2 to 3, and then the 6:30 Chet Afternoons with Jalen Nye from 3 to 6. So long, everybody. Back at you tomorrow at noon.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.